everyone. Welcome to the Heart of the Matter. I'm recording this on a Thursday. I don't normally do recordings on Thursdays. I have other things that I have to do on Thursdays, but something happened this week that provoked me to come to the microphone, so to speak. Now, no doubt most, and I would think all of you, have heard that this week President Barack Obama announced that he's lifting our nation's economic embargo of Cuba, and he's establishing diplomatic relations with the totalitarian, murderous Castro brothers with their regime, including our nations exchanging ambassadors and setting up embassies. And there's a number of other facets to this whole deal. And it is, again, just the latest of a long train of unlawful, unconstitutional acts by the lawbreaker-in-chief of our nation. Now, this action by Obama has given the Castro regime great prestige, and it's not going to do any good for the Cuban people in any way, including economically, for instance. There'll be much talk about how this will help the Cuban people economically. It won't. The only ones who are going to fare better economically will be the Castro brothers, Fidel and Raul, and, of course, the ruling class, the ruling elite there in Cuba, and then those whom they favor. In short, those that do the favors that they ask of them, so to speak, those that help prop up that government. But the Cuban people will not benefit economically or politically or any other way from this move by Obama any more than they've gained economically or, with very importantly, with regard to civil or religious liberties by the ongoing trade and diplomatic relations Cuba has had with Europe for many years. The Cuban exile community in America is furious, and even a number of Democrat legislators have spoken against Obama on account of this great treachery on his part. And there are people who should know, including from that Cuban exile community, who are saying this will actually strengthen, and I believe it's so, strengthen the Castro regime, even after they're gone, and probably cause communism to keep control much longer than it would have there in Cuba. And of course, Cuba, where the jails are full of political opponents of Castro, and certainly any number of evangelical Christians are pining away in those jails. And so Obama has also stabbed them in the back, not just the Cuban people. But I need to get to a specific aspect of this story. If we're going to be talking about the Cuban people, and again, including the evangelicals in jail there in Cuba being stabbed in the back, then we need to get to this, namely that Pope Francis is getting much credit for being the negotiator between Obama and Fidel. In fact, our government is saying this couldn't have happened without Pope Francis. So it's come out that he worked very, very hard. Not that it's being kept secret. Pope Francis wants it to come out. He's proud of it. And our government wants it to come out. And Fidel wants it to come out that the Pope worked very, very hard for this historic and infamous development, which I say is a stab in the back to the Cuban people yearning to breathe free. But then, you know, the Vatican has been stabbing those same Cuban people in the back for decades. I listened to an interview of a spokesman from the New Evangelical Regent University concerning the part, well, at least this was in the interview, one aspect of it. He commented on the part Francis has played in this Obama-Castro matchmaking. Well, the professor, and I've forgotten his name, said he felt that Francis acted out of naivete. I mean, this professor was right when he said this is doing no favor to the people of Cuba, what's happened, and so on and so forth. But as for Francis, he says, oh, I think it was just, he's not a politician. He didn't realize what he was doing. This is amazing. The lengths to which new evangelicals will go to avoid facing the truth about the papacy, it's amazing. The Pope is no politician. The Pope like every pope, is a skilled politician, including being an expert in duplicity and double talk, all to advance the agenda and the empire of Antichrist. And beyond that, this pope is a Jesuit, and Jesuits are the most skilled of all popes, in political intrigue and double dealing. I realize he's the first Jesuit pope, at least officially, but let me put it this way. Jesuits are the most skilled of all of Rome's men, let's put it that way, in political intrigue and double dealing. When you look at bishops and cardinals and papal nuncios, which is, of course, the Vatican ambassadors. And remember, though, the Pope is not only the head of the Roman Church, supposedly, of course, the infallible head, and according to Rome, of course, that's the only true church, but the Pope is the head of the Vatican civil state. Officially the head of the Vatican civil state. And in that role, he is by definition a politician. Now, the papacy, of course, claims the sovereign right to bear both the civil and the spiritual sword. And the Antichrist has two manifestations, civil and religious, the beast and the mother of harlots, working in tandem for evil and against Christ and his church, and of course, the word of God and the salvation of souls. Now, what ecumenical evangelicals cannot seem to get straight is that the papacy and Romanism is sheer evil, gross idolatry, and utterly opposed, blasphemously opposed to the crown rights, blood, and righteousness of Christ and his headship of the Church of Jesus Christ. And the papacy and Romanism is utterly opposed to the Word of God and the true doctrines of the true faith, and opposed, utterly opposed to the true Church of Jesus Christ. Further, the new evangelicals, cannot seem to get it into their heads that the papacy is no friend, no real friend of life, liberty, civil, and religious freedom. The popes, though, have been on warm, friendly terms with the Castro regime for decades. This is no new development. But think about it. Someone says, oh, but that's a communist regime. Think about it. The papacy and the Roman Church hierarchy, by tradition, by doctrine, by decree, by philosophy, by policy, and by practice, support the centralization of the power in the hands of the few. The popes are big supporters of more power for the United Nations, and as Benedict put it, Pope Benedict, what we need, he said, is a world authority with teeth. Rome, at least since Aquinas, has been deeply socialistic as to economic policy and is dead set against what light the scriptures provide even concerning economics and the work ethic and so forth. Rome officially champions evolution, just like the communists. Rome is also pushing the global warming agenda, which gives the state much, much, much more control over people's lives. And Rome, like all totalitarians, is against the right of the people to keep and bear arms and so forth. We could go on and on. As we talk about the papacy and Romanism and its affinity with communism, Rome, do you realize in the first part of the 20th century that Rome, by the Roman bishops, the Pope, the papacy by the Roman bishops in this United States of America began to lobby hard and work fervently for a socialized health care system. Now, that Romish dream has finally become a reality, at least in part. Look at Cuba with their health care system. What if we would have gotten socialized health care 50, 60, 70 years ago or more when Rome wanted us to have it? We would look like Cuba now with all the suffering there. Do you realize that Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when he was president, and he was known for his socialist agenda and vision and Keynesian economics, do you realize he had as a close economic advisor a Roman Catholic priest? So I could go on and on speaking of the harmony and affinity the papacy and the Roman hierarchy has, even with communism and totalitarians such as the Castro brothers. Now, after Barack Obama won the presidency, I wrote an article titled The Coming Phony War Between Barack and Benedict. And that's just what it's been. I say what I said about Benedict and Brock was true, and it holds true for Brock and Francis. By the way, it might interest you to know that Pope Francis and Fidel, bloody Fidel, cruel Fidel, have something else in common. Francis is a Jesuit, and of course Jesuit educated, but Castro is also Jesuit educated. But now, I mentioned just a little while ago that the Vatican, the papacy, Rome, the Pope and his men have been stabbing the Cuban people in the back for decades. Now, this is well documented. And by the way, stabbing America in the back over and over and over in many ways, but certainly with regard to our policy toward Cuba, our right policy up until now, Barack Hussein Obama wants to change it. But anyway, this is all well documented. It's so well documented that it would take more time than I have today and want to take, quite frankly, as we're kind of doing this on the spur of the moment. It would take more time than I have to set forth all the evidence. But the reality is, when Castro first came to power, he moved against the Roman Church because he saw it as a competitor and a potential threat. But after a couple of years and much backroom dealing between Vatican ambassadors and Castro, then a policy of coexistence for mutual benefit was arrived at. And from then on, the Pope and his men, his cardinals and bishops and papal nuncios, have had warm relations with the Castro regime and have even openly commended and supported and lied for that regime. This is nothing new with the Roman Catholic Church. You realize that if you look back to just the 20th century and just take, for example, Mussolini, the fascist Mussolini, and the concordat that the Pope struck up with him and agreed to and entered into, which gave the papacy back civil power there in Italy and reinstituted the papal civil state. And, of course, there was a concordat between the Pope and Hitler as well, for the mutual benefit of both. And I've talked about that in the past, and we won't now. So this is nothing new. Now, Armando Valladares, you've maybe heard of him, he is a Roman Catholic, but he didn't accept Castro's rule and go along with it. And as a consequence, he suffered 22 years in prison and much torture for that. Well, he's documented the wretched collaboration of Rome with Castro at the price of the Cuban people's freedom and, in some cases, lives. Now, I've read things he's written, but I've read other things as well. And so it's not just him when I speak of this. I have done research over the years, much research, and talked about this before. But what I've done is grabbed some various articles very quickly, some things I want to read to you here in a minute. And before I do that, I mentioned that the papacy, Rome, has collaborated with Castro. And I mentioned, I said, at the price of the Cuban people's freedom, but also, I said, in some cases, lives. And with regard to that last point, I'm just going to give you one. Now, just one example of many which could be given. In fact, let me give you an example, not even from the 60s or from the 70s, but let's go to the 80s. Now, specifically, this is a documented betrayal by Rome of a Cuban mother and her two young sons who sought political asylum at the so-called Holy See's diplomatic mission in Havana. Now, these were dissidents. Well, rather than give them asylum, the Pope's representatives alerted Castro's special police, who then came to the diplomatic mission, which freely opened the doors to them, and they arrested the three freedom seekers, subsequently executing the two young men and condemning the mother to 20 years in prison. Now, what I'm going to do is just read, with little comment, in order to save time, some excerpts from a number of accurate reports. So this is going to be a little messy, because as I said, I just grabbed these things, and it's going to be a little messy. But after hearing of this so-called achievement of Obama, Francis, and Fidel, talk about an axis of evil. After hearing of this, I wanted to say something. I wanted to put something together. I just am so vexed in my heart to see this betrayal of, yes, the Cuban people, but also Christians in prison in Cuba. And I think this will serve the purpose I have in mind. I say, just grabbing these articles and reading some things, throwing some truths, some facts out there to back up what I briefly sketched out. Since the announcement of Obama's sweetheart deal for the Cuban regime and the news that Pope Francis played a big part in that, many people have been talking as if what Francis has done is some new thing for the Vatican, which it is not. His predecessor, if we walk backwards here, Benedict, also had a warm relationship with the Castro brothers, warm enough to strengthen the Castro brothers and to advance the cause of the Roman Church in Cuba. And he actually praised their regime in public. I've read one of his speeches. Now, Pope John Paul, likewise, was very close to the Castros, and he did much to strengthen their hand because he also discerned it was in Rome's best interest. Pope John Paul, he's always lauded as being an enemy of communism. Well, of course he wasn't. He was not the one who brought down the Iron Curtain, as they say. God brought down the Iron Curtain. And I think in that, he blessed the Christians behind the Iron Curtain who suffered so very, very much for Christ and for religious liberty and for the independence of the true Church of Christ under his headship. And I believe that, of course, Ronald Reagan was a political tool God used. But really, it goes back to those faithful brethren of ours who suffered and sacrificed so much for so many decades in the Soviet Union. Well, Pope John Paul did whatever worked, you might say, for the interests of Rome and where it worked. And when it came to Cuba, he was very warm and cozy with Cuba and, of course, as usual, sticking America in the back. But we could also go back to the early years of the Castro regime. And what you see there is after, a rough spot, the Pope and the political religious machinery of the papacy have supported the Castros for mutual benefit. Now, I'm going to, I think, read the most by the articles I've grabbed on purpose. I'm going to deal mostly with Pope John Paul and the Castro regime, just read some things that are very insightful. But I also want to first, I mentioned Benedict. I want to just read a bit from an article by Armando Valadares, who, by the way, also eventually served as an ambassador of the United States. Now, the subject of this is a visit by one Cardinal Bert. I'll probably pronounce his name wrong. I've seen it before, but, seeing and pronouncing are often two different things, aren't they? Bertone, B-E-R-T-O-N-E, the Vatican Secretary of State under Pope Benedict. And we have here some comments. And I'm just going to, I said this is going to be messy, didn't I? I'm going to just jump through this. It's titled, The Visit to Communist Cuba by Cardinal Bertone, Secretary of State to the Holy See on February 21st through 26th. I believe, yes, it was 2008, I'm sure. But let me just read some of this. Before embarking for Cuba, in statements to the, and then it's an Italian word, but it's the title of the official newspaper of the Italian Episcopate, it's the Roman Catholic, of course, Episcopate. Cardinal Bertone acknowledged that this trip was in response to an invitation of the Cuban bishops to commemorate the 10th anniversary of John Paul II's trip to Cuba. He also noted that it was the fruit of a particularly warm invitation from the civil authorities, that is, of the current communist jailers. Most shockingly, the head of the Vatican Diplomatic Corps added that, quote, Cuba is proof that dialogue, if it is sincere, always bears fruit, unquote. Apparently he forgot the gospel warning that a bad tree never gives good fruit. Nor did he lose the opportunity to praise Archbishop. I think I better be careful with these names. I'm not sure how to pronounce this Spanish first name. And the second name, Zekai. 1914 and 1991 are the dates of his life. The apostolic nuncio during the early years of the Communist Revolution, notorious for his collaboration with the regime. That's the Pope's man. That's the Pope's ambassador carrying out his wishes. And let me back up again. Nor did he lose the opportunity to praise Archbishop Zacchai, Z-A-C-C-H-I, the apostolic nuncio during the early years of the Communist Revolution, notorious for his collaboration with the regime. Zacchai went so far as to refer to Castro as, quote, a man with deep Christian values, unquote. Yeah, this is the man that had them dig trenches and gun down with firing squads whole busloads of soldiers from the former regime and also political opponents and so on and so forth, and jailed and tortured, and to this day does when it comes to political opponents and, of course, Christians. According to Cardinal Bertone, he did, quote, very much to successfully stimulate relations between Havana and Rome. So that's the cardinal. This is 2008, and this Cardinal Bertone is praising this archbishop who was right from the Pope and was supporting and collaborating with the regime, the Castro regime, in the early years of the revolution when there was much going against it. There was a lot of resistance in Cuba. There were freedom fighters, actually, in Cuba. And, of course, America was trying to undermine the Castro regime. But there was Rome. There was Rome supporting it. A Cuban foreign minister going on here, Perez Roque, R-O-Q-U-E, who awaited Bertone at the airport together with church and communist authorities, cynically said that he was receiving the prelate with respect and hospitality, and that this visit was the expression of the excellent relations between the regime and the Vatican. Understandably, the communist press has played up Bertone's stay in Cuba, in particular his meeting with the new dictator Raul Castro. Incredibly filled with smiles and cordiality as seen in the photos published by the Cuban press. At this point in time, Raul, of course, was taking more of the forward position, you might say, as, of course, Fidel was already sickening and had a lot of problems. Not that Fidel was or is out of the picture yet. These two brothers are very close. They work together. Raul, despite being together with his brother, one of the greatest oppressors and torturers of the regime for a half century, received best wishes from the Vatican envoy for success on the mission that the new dictator, according to the cardinal, will exercise in the service of his country. Did you get that? Success. This is from the Secretary of State of the Vatican State. This is a cardinal sent by the Pope. And he's telling Raul, best wishes for success. You know what that means when you talk to a bloody communist totalitarian ruler with a track record of butchery and oppression? Success on the mission that he'll exercise, quote, in the service of his country. Cardinal Bertone also did not fail to make emphatic statements against the North American embargo, America's embargo, really, United States, apparently forgetting that the cause of the problem is the communist regime's ruthless internal embargo against the Cuban people, putting it that way. The pro-Castro attitude of the cardinal was already manifested on his previous trip to Cuba in October of 2005, when the then Archbishop of Genoa had a long interview with Fidel Castro. Afterwards, he praised the remarkable lucidity of the tyrant and expressed his conviction that Fidel had grown in respect for religion and appreciation for the church, all in quotes, concluding against all evidence that in the island prison, quote, the opening is already complete. That was Armando Valadares. Now, I want to move on to a publication. It's actually the publication of the Communist Central Committee in Cuba. It's the Granma, G-R-A-M-M-A, ANMA International. That's the publication. And it has to do with a speech Fidel gave. The title is "To Make the Pope Responsible for the Fall of Socialism is to make too simple an analysis of history." Fidel reiterates similarities between the humanist ideas of the Pope and those defended by the Cuban Revolution. "We fervently want the Pope's example to endure," confirmed the president, Fidel Castro. This would be after the death of the Pope. During his special address in the International Conference Center to leaders of the party, state, government, and the UJC, representatives of the grassroots organizations and officers and combatants of the Revolutionary Armed Forces and the Minister of the Interior. In other words, to the whole communist apparatus. "It honors us," he stated, "that he visited us. I was right," he added, "when I said that the Pope did not entertain any notion of damaging our people." Of course, read their regime. They always talk about the people, don't they, the communists, but they really are concerned about the regime. "His sentiments toward the Cuban people," and again, substitute regime, "were noble and were clearly summarized by him on leaving Cuba when he spoke out against the blockade. Over and over and over again, see, the popes have attacked America when they're in communist countries and other places around the world, which he described as, listen to this, unjust and ethically unacceptable. This opinion of the Holy Father," commented Fidel, "should not be forgotten by the President of the United States when he takes part in the funeral ceremony in Rome. The leader of the revolution characterized the fundamental features of conflicts of the contemporary era as a basis for understanding the importance of the pontificate of John Paul II, whom he described as an exceptional man, a determined fighter, untiring, whose virtues should not be ignored. Quote, these are our opinions from a human and social focus in the light of fundamental questions for humanity," he commented. "The Pope was not born or educated to destroy socialism. Making him responsible for the fall of this system in Europe is to make a simplistic analysis of history," he confirmed. He declared, and he's right with that, he declared that if Cuban socialism were to collapse one day, the blame would lie with no one else but ourselves. The Pope was very critical of the capitalistic system, and the popes always are. "The Pope was received in Cuba in 1998, said Fidel, "and in his sermon that was transmitted across the world, our people recognized the battle that the Supreme Pontiff was waging against underdevelopment, poverty, the external debt, and the pillaging of countries," of course, by countries like the United States of America, "and for the globalization of solidarity." You know, that's Romish language, isn't it? The globalization of solidarity, ideas with which the revolution fully agrees. He recalled that he had publicly stated these views of the Pope in December 1997 during the session of the National Assembly of People's Power, and later during a television interview broadcast on January 16, 1998, shortly before the Pope's visit, thus demonstrating that the revolution has not changed its opinion. He reaffirmed that the Pope's visit to our country took place. Now listen to this. This is no mistake. He reaffirmed that the Pope's visit to our country took place at a difficult juncture for the revolution due to the economic situation created by the collapse of the Soviet Union and the Eastern European Socialist Bloc. The empire, read United States of America there, was maintaining intense pressure that consisted, on the one hand, of blockading the nation in an attempt to bring it to its knees by hunger, which is a lie. That's not what we're talking about there. And on the other hand, of opening its doors to any Cuban, including those committing crimes. By any means, that's not true. Castro has often dumped off criminals, I mean just common criminals, on America, but we have not opened our doors to common criminals. "And we have had to endure these conditions up until now when things have begun to radically change," he stressed. Yes, thanks in part to the Pope coming to shore up the Castro brothers, to shore up the regime, to help them. Yes, it was no mistake he came at what Castro reaffirmed was a difficult time for the revolution after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the economic collapse of the Soviet Union, and the Eastern European Socialist Bloc. In that context, within the empire, read United States of America, and in other places, the Pope's visit came as something that would lead to the final collapse of socialism in Cuba. He's saying that's what we all thought, which we didn't, not all of us. They believed that the revolution would tumble down like the walls of Jericho before the sound of trumpets. But the Pope did not bring trumpets, nor did he come with the intention of destroying the revolution, and truer words were never spoken. Now here, we're going now to another Latin American newspaper or publication, Prensa Latina. Let's just read a little bit about the Pope's visit. Some interesting things here. The Mass at Pope John Paul II, and by the way, as I read these things, I've read the same things in many different sources. The Mass that Pope John Paul II gave on January 26, 1998 at Havana's Revolution Square caused particular emotion among Cubans and undoubtedly the Pope himself. "Cuba, friend, the Pope is with you," were his first words to hundreds of thousands of people that jammed Revolution Square with a massive statue of José Martí, witnessing the historic event. Now, among those hundreds of thousands were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, for all I know, thousands of Castro's secret police, and of course there were uniformed officials as well. In fact, and I think there's a stack here somewhere it tells about it, one man began to I've seen the tape. He began to call out for freedom and asking the Pope to speak out for freedom and against the incarceration of dissidents and others. And the Pope didn't say a word. He didn't even recognize that, even as this man was dragged away. It may have happened more than once, but I saw that particular little clip of this thing. I better keep going here. John Paul II had already seen the site during the tour he made of Havana the day he arrived in Cuba amid a crowd that welcomed him with impressive hospitality. 5 days later, thousands of Cubans, believers and non-believers, and now when it says believers, that's Roman Catholics is what they're saying, because the Roman Catholic Church has long had, there's a big basilica in Havana. The churches are not shut down. The Roman Catholic churches, there are churches all over Cuba, Roman Catholic churches, that is, crowded the square on that winter sunny morning. "I am very happy to be here with you to celebrate the Sunday Eucharist," said the Pope. He spoke of faith, relations between the state and religion, and the search of justice and freedom. He also noted, listen to this, "Capitalist neoliberalism subdues human beings and nations' development to the blind forces of market, charging the least developed countries with intolerable taxes." Now, isn't that nice socialist/communist jargon? As he stands there in Cuba, where the people have suffered for years and years and years from what? The very policies he's defending, and because they don't have the economic system that he's condemning. The Pope could have looked around. Of course, maybe they did get rid of all the old cars. Maybe they, they probably did. They probably stocked all the shelves before they took them into any of the stores and so on and so forth. But he knew. He knew. He absolutely knew. Going on. "This way, some nations allow for the exaggerated enrichment of a few at the expense of impoverishment of a growing minority, making the rich richer and the poor poorer." Well, that's the situation, isn't it, in Cuba? The guys at the top, they're plenty rich. From there on down, it's more and more poverty. These are among the most applauded remarks from an audience that knew and agreed with them. The same happened when he advocated the church should continue speaking of social issues as long as the world witnesses acts of injustice, no matter how insignificant they are. When the ceremony concluded, President Fidel Castro walked to the stage and they both greeted cordially as on other occasions during his visit, thus strengthening a relation of respect and sympathy. Here is, again, Prensa, I don't know how to pronounce that part, Latina. 7 years ago, when Pope John Paul II visited Havana, this is a subsequent article, the whole world followed closely his historic meeting with Cuban President Fidel Castro. This was not the first time they met. In November 1996, John Paul and Fidel Castro held talks at the Vatican. "It was a miracle," the Cuban leader said then. Fidel Castro considered it a miracle that such an extraordinary person had granted an interview with a modest revolutionary fighter and politician. In other words, This is a controlled media source. I do not have merits for people to consider my contacts with the Pope extraordinary. His humbleness and greatness to receive me is what should be highlighted, he maintained. Media and people expecting differences between the island leader and John Paul II largely covered their meeting, which mostly was characterized by respect and mutual admiration. And it was voiced. Upon arrival in Havana on February the 26th, 1998, when the Cuban statesman and ecclesiastic authorities received him, the Supreme Pontiff said he felt profoundly satisfied. It is a great pleasure to greet President Fidel Castro, who had the gesture of receiving me and to whom I want to convey my gratitude for his warm welcome, the Pope noted. Closing the visit, Fidel Castro congratulated the Pope for the example they, the two of them together, had given the world. You, by visiting what some people nicknamed the last communist stronghold, we, by receiving the religious leader they wanted to blame for the breakup of socialism in Europe, he stressed. Meanwhile, John Paul II publicly condemned the U.S. blockade on Cuba. There it is again. It's unjust and unacceptable, he denounced. Thus, John Paul II left the Cuban people and their leader with a message of peace and love. No, he did not. No, he did not. Not to the suffering people of Cuba. Not to those in the Cuban gulag, so to speak, the prison system. And by the way, of course, China is still communist as well. So is Vietnam. So is North Korea. So Castro better not beat his chest too much. But they're all smiles. They're all smiles and hugs. Now I'm going to just read a few excerpts of messages that have been made public, exchanged between Pope John Paul II and Fidel Castro. And there are others, but just some excerpts. I won't give dates or anything. Here is Fidel writing to the Pope, Your Holiness. I wish to send you my warmest greetings. Again, these are excerpts. I wish you long, long health to allow you to preach in favor of the poor and the destitute of humanity. You will be accompanied by a growing number of persons who have the same sentiments and hopes. Receive my congratulations for the magnificent group of excellent persons of the Catholic Church that I have had the privilege to meet after your appreciated visit to our country. And I beg you, excuse these short and informal words before bidding farewell to Mother Tecla and those who accompany her. I hope that in the midst of your tireless battling, I will have the opportunity of greeting you again. I wish you success in your fight for peace and the globalization of solidarity. The everyday events demonstrate the urgency to achieve these imperative objectives. And let me say one more thing. I did earlier, just very briefly, and not comprehensively, compare the agreement, I guess, of the papacy with communists. And we could add to that that the papacy is filthy rich. All sorts of wealth, and more wealth. And what do they do? Do they really help the poor? Well, only by lobbying for tax money from the citizens, for instance, of this country. And then the government takes money and they give to various Roman Catholic organizations, and that's how they supposedly help the poor. And so we're forced to help the poor through the Roman Catholic Church in that regard. And we should freely help those in need because we have a sincere desire to. And we also, of course, should have the freedom to pick where we put that help and to who. But let's go on. This is to Castro from the Pope. He does all his greetings here, and he says, I take this opportunity to renew. He greets not just Castro, but the whole communist regime. The feeling of my highest and distinguished esteem. Can you imagine that? Here's one also to Castro from the Pope. And also to his regime. On the occasion last month of January of the 5th anniversary of my unforgettable visit to Cuba that marked me deeply, and remembering the emotion of those intense days that followed me to know the people closely, I send Your Excellency by the hand of the Cardinal, again, it's Italian here, I'm quite sure, not positive, but anyway, the Cardinal who is the prefect of the Congregation for Evangelization of the Peoples, my warm and cordial greeting, and I renew my vows of affection and closeness to all Cubans. It's a funny way of showing it to the vast majority of Cubans, but yes, his vows of affection and closeness to the communist thugs. I express to you, Mr. President, my highest and distinguished esteem. But that's enough of these sort of letters. Let me just read a little bit more. I hope I'm not boring you, but I'm trying to be a little redundant here and just put out some facts here to show how diabolical the relationship has been between the papacy and the communist rulers of Cuba, and has been almost since the start. We have some things from when the Pope died, specifically Pope John Paul. We're not going to go any further than him. We're going to stop here. I'm just going to read a few more things, but let's just grab this, some things that Castro said and wrote. He said, humanity will preserve an emotional memory of the tireless work of His Holiness John Paul II in favor of peace, justice, and solidarity among all people. He expressed how heartbreaking it was that the Pope had passed. Well, let's just go to the message written by Cuban President Fidel Castro in the condolence book. To Pope John Paul II, rest in peace, indefatigable battler for friendship among the peoples, enemy of war and friend of the poor. The efforts of those who wanted to utilize your prestige and great spiritual authority against the just cause of our people, read again, communism and the Castro regime, and their fight against the giant empire, read United States of America, were in vain. You visited us in difficult times, right? And he shored them up. We talked about that. And could perceive the nobility, solidarity of spirit, and moral valor of the people who welcomed you with special respect and affection, because you knew how to appreciate the goodness and love of human beings that prompted your long pilgrimage over the earth. Before returning to Rome, you said that the restrictive economic measures imposed from outside the country, that is, United States of America, the country that stood firm on that until recently as Europe crumbled and other countries crumbled, were unjust and ethically unacceptable. That earned you forever the gratitude and affection of all Cubans. No, it didn't. It earned them the gratitude and affection of the communist Cubans, who today pay you a merited tribute. Your leaving pains us, unforgettable friend, and we fervently desire that your example will endure. Fidel Castro. But, you know, some of that pain now, it's been alleviated by Benedict, and then even more so by Francis, hasn't it? Let's go on. Here's Raul Castro. I'll just read the ending of his condolences written in the condolence book. When Pope John Paul II died, His Holiness John Paul II protested on behalf of the poor. He fought for peace. We shall always remember him with respect and profound friendship. And then we're back to this, an article from, I say we're back because it's the, I know I'm pronouncing it wrong. My daughters can speak Spanish. In fact, one of my daughters, Janet, was in Cuba on, well, it was a covert mission trip to get Bibles spread around Cuba, and she actually, with some others, got caught, and they were incarcerated in a motel, not a dungeon, and they had to pay for their own so-called incarceration, and it was incarceration of a kind, but it brought some cash into Cuba, and they were questioned, of course, by Cuban officials and so on and so forth. But at any rate, she can speak Spanish. When she hears me, she will probably wince with some of these names. Grandma. I come up with, sounds like grandma, doesn't it? But G-R-A-N-M-A International. Again, this is the official media organ of the Central Communist Party of Cuba, the committee. Fidel and Raul expressed condolences at the death of Pope John Paul II. Cuban President Fidel Castro and First Vice President Raul Castro expressed their condolences at the death of His Holiness Pope John Paul II in the condolence book. Wearing dark suits, Fidel and Raul arrived at the seat located in Miramar. This has to do with an apostolic it has to do with the Pope's embassy, let's put it that way, structure, located in Miramar shortly before 5 p.m., accompanied by Felipe Perez, and last name I'm not going to attempt, foreign minister. And then anyway, it names a bunch of communist officials. That's what it comes down to. So they all come, and then they were received by Monsignor Luigi Bonazzi, papal nuncio in our country, it says. Many leaders of the revolution and Cubans, believers and non-believers, went to sign the condolence book. A funeral mass for His Holiness Pope John Paul II was celebrated in a packed Havana cathedral. Yes, they have a cathedral. I think I called it a basilica. I better stay with the right terms, but they have a large cathedral in Havana. Anyway, and this mass was attended by President Fidel Castro. Over 1,000 people inside the cathedral and many others standing outside listened to the homily given by Cardinal Jaime Ortega Almino. I bet I did good on that. And celebrating the Holy Eucharist, Cardinal Ortega, that I have right, is also the president of the Cuban Synod of Catholic Bishops. Yes, there's a Cuban Synod of Catholic Bishops. Do you see this? They have churches. They have bishops. They have priests. They have diocese in Cuba. They have for decades. Anyway, this cardinal that celebrated, as they say, the Holy Eucharist, asked that from his happy eternity, Pope John Paul II would continue accompanying the Cuban people and church, quote, so that the testimony of his life and his loving dedication will bear fruit among us. Castro is not much worried about the Roman Catholic Church, is he? No, he's got a happy, warm relationship with the papacy. He doesn't have to worry about anything. He can go and sit in a funeral mass, no problem, listen to the cardinal preaching, if you want to call it that, with absolute comfort. Let's go on. We also had the papal nuncio, I already brought that up, at this thing that he sat with Castro, apparently. It says the mass was attended by members of, it wasn't just the Castros here, the Political Bureau including, all right, we won't go into all that, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, a large group of government ministers and members of the highest ranks of the leadership, and then also the head of the Office of Religious Affairs of the Central Committee of the Communist Party, also the head of the Martí. I know this Martí, I've got a vague memory of who this was. I think it was a person. I hope I'm not making a fool of myself, but I can't really remember it. I thought he was a revolutionary. But anyway, the head of the Martí program office, along with other revolutionary leaders. And then, just let me give you a couple of other things. When the Pope died, various Cuban officials issued all sorts of statements. And here's a statement by the national and foreign, actually it's to the national and foreign media, by the Minister of Foreign Affairs. And I'm not going to read all of it. It's quite long. But he finishes up by saying, it is with profound grief that we now learned of his passing away. We always saw Pope John Paul II, and we will continue to see him as a friend. And then he goes on and talks about why he was a friend. And we will always remember with gratitude his visit to our country in 1998. His friendly words we will always remember as well. His statements against the blockade endured by our people, there it is again, which he regarded as, quote, restrictive economic measures imposed from outside the country, unjust and ethically unacceptable, unquote. So over and over and over, you see the Pope lauded by these communist officials for supporting the Castro regime and propping it up and making it stronger, including at a time when it was in some trouble. And one more thing. I mean, there's so much I could bring to you, so many examples of the point I'm pressing home. But I just want to do one more thing here. After his death, there was a photo exhibition open in Havana to honor John Paul II. And I have an article here. And it's just incredible. It's in Havana's Revolutionary Square. This was opened up to pay tribute to John Paul II. And at the opening, where then it lists all of these communist officials, as well as, yes, there he is again, the papal nuncio, and representatives of the island's religious community, read Roman Catholic bishops, priests, etc. And then there was a historian, again, that stressed what a friend of Cuba Pope John Paul II was, and of course the papacy has been and is. And so you have this photo exhibition with all these propaganda pictures of the Pope with Fidel Castro, and then a few other things, coins, medals commemorating the Pope and his papacy. And says here, present at the thing was Secretary of the Cuban State, Communist Party officials and different ones named, and of course, the papal nuncio. And so we're going to leave it go at that. I realize that this has not been the smoothest production I've probably ever put together. Not that being smooth has ever been at the top of my agenda, but I just wanted to press home a point here. And we need to be wise with regard to the Roman Church. And perhaps if evangelicals would trust in the Lord more, instead of trying to put faith in the Roman Church to help them against the enemies arrayed against Christianity, and perhaps if evangelicals would know the history of papacy and Romanism, as they should, and their techniques and their methods and their philosophy and their dogma and so on and so forth, and the claims of the papacy, perhaps they wouldn't be drawn in to all of this machinations of the Pope. Perhaps they wouldn't be seduced by what we see here. I've got the Bible open, the sorcery of the Antichrist. But let me just leave you with this, because it just seems so appropriate. As I was talking about the Castro regime and the papacy and certainly Francis now, I'm in chapter 17 of Revelation. We'll leave it here. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. We'll leave it there. I've preached on this. Other ministers have as well. And we'll just leave it there.